Welcome to the Gear Garage Live Show. This weekly YouTube show covers whitewater rafting, river safety,
oh God, I lost my paddle,
gear, and anything else Zach feels like rambling on about.
Well, happy Monday. Welcome to the show. We have a lot of questions to get through, so we're going to just jump right into it. The first thing we'll do is answer questions, and then I want to talk about this new prototype of this sock doulage or throw bag that I got. It literally, this just came today, just came minutes before, so I thought I'd talk about it. If you don't know about sock doulage, I don't know how to pronounce that. Those of you that do the Grand Canyon can probably pronounce it better than I can. This guy Dan makes equipment for pack rafters. It's just really thoughtful, well thought out stuff. I've been chatting with him a bit about making great throwbacks. He already makes a really awesome throwback. I bought a few. I really liked it, and now I'm selling them for him. I'm helping him sell them, and he's made some modifications I think are better for rafters. So we'll get to that at the end, kind of blabbering on right now. Let's get to the questions. All right, the first one, Zach, since you're designing boats with Sotar, and I'm shopping for one, roast my current idea. This is for a multi-day setup for me, my wife, and two dogs. In theory, we could have a third human with us at some point, but that has never happened to date. Okay, so just before we get into this, I feel like 16-foot is the boat you want. I just feel that that's the boat, a 16-foot raft. I think that is what most private boaters should get. A lot of private boaters think they should go smaller, because they want to do low water something. The problem is they go smaller and the boats sit deeper in the water and they get stuck more. I see this in the Middle Fork of the Salmon all the time. All these like 13-foot boats, 12-foot boats, even 14-foot boats are getting stuck and we're cruising by in 18s. So I'm gonna say 16. That's my quick answer. Let's move on though. I was thinking of getting a 15 ST. Yeah, so close. 15 is close to 16. Making the tubes 22 inches, which is smart. Bigger tubes, the advantages are they're less likely to flip. They're less likely to wrap because it takes more water to get over the side. They're just more stable in general. The downsides are it's a bit harder to get back in the boat. It's more material, so it's more expensive a little bit. And you have less interior space. And people really like their interior space because they like to bring a lot of stuff. Making the interior. So I'm thinking about, okay, getting a 15 ST, which that's a Sotar design, which I'm not really familiar with the regular Sotar designs that much. So 22 and make the tube 22 inches, got to add an inch, smart. Make the interior width narrower. So because the tubes are bigger, you have less interior width, which he's making the tubes between them, that's 2 extra inches. So he's making an inch narrower. So the boat's going to be overall an inch wider. Okay. And adding 6 inches in length. That would mean the boat's 186 by 185, length to width about 2.18. Yeah, 2.18 is right in that, like, is that 2 to 18 or 2.18? I think he meant 2.18. That 2 to 2.22 range is kind of what you're shooting for. It's not that hard to hit. I think, honestly, 2.18 is like kind of a money spot. So I think that's a good place to be. Seems good. Again, I just go with the 16. And I'm going to pull up the boat I designed for Wing. If I can get rid of this real quick. And let's see, Wing raft. This is what I'm just gonna tell you, the Wing raft 16-foot. They call it the Surge. And the Sotar boat I'm gonna design is gonna be super similar to this. So like this, there's a photo of it right there. Having rowed this boat a ton personally, it's just money. It's an amazing boat. And so this is 6 inches longer than what you're saying, but also a bit wider. So here's the specs. And it's 182 by 88. And I think what you were going at was 186. Wait, this is 192 by 88. And you have 186 by 85. So the Surge, this boat is 6 inches longer and 3 inches wider, which gives you a little more interior space because it's wider. And what's 6 more inches? Like, it's going to help you. It's going to just be more boat overall. Like, I would go with this. Sotar, they can probably make my new design for you. So I took this design for this boat I've used for a long time, and I've just sort of what I've learned, I built on it, and Sotar is going to make this boat. So if you're asking my opinion, I'm of course going to say go with the board I designed because I think it's amazing. But if you want to do what you're doing, this seems great too. But I think that 16 foot is like the boat most private boaters should get. This is 15.6, close enough. So yeah, seems cool. I'm not a huge fan of taking a current proven design and then tweaking it. Because you don't always know what the tweaks will be, but if that ratio is 2.18, that's probably fine. All right, moving on. Okay, bringing first time rafter on a trip. I haven't read this yet. I haven't read a lot of these questions, but I just want to say my I don't know where this is going. I'm going to say you have a responsibility to them to take care of them, to give them a safety talk, to properly outfit them, to set expectations correctly, to warn them of the risks they're taking by doing a trip. You have the responsibility I have as an outfitter taking people. You have the responsibility bringing a first timer on a trip because they're just trusting you. Okay. So anyway, here we go. Love the show. Recently purchased a Gear Garage membership. Oh, cool. Thanks. That's super nice. And I recommend everybody watching, listening to purchase. Oh, that's cool. Yeah. So membership, you pay like $2 a month. And I haven't been really good at making members only content lately, but I will, I do when there's the right content. But I appreciate the $2 a month or whatever you do. There's a way to pay $10 a month. It just helps me spend money on stuff and not like stress about it. So I bought something the other day that I wanted to test and it cost me a few hundred. Oh, those new Palm shoes. I got those new Palm Wave sneakers, paid full price. I usually get pro deals on things or people send me stuff for free. I just really want to do a review of the Palm, these sneakers, $150. And I'm fine just paying full price because I can do a very honest opinion, like true opinion. I don't owe anything to the people who sent me this stuff. If I buy the things to review them, I can say whatever I want. And so by being a member helps me have the money to just buy stuff to review that I want to review. Okay. Anyway, going on. The river section is class 3-4. I've done the section before and generally raft 3-4. Okay. My problem is that I'm somewhat regretting inviting my buddy. He's a good friend, but I feel like his inexperience in rivers could lead to potential problems, particularly if we get a situation of a flip pin, which is definitely possible in the section. I want to guess the section now. Maybe the Tuolumne, although I'd call the Tuolumne 4, not 3-4. This is an overnight trip or a day trip where you can likely pin. Anyway, the question is, for you is, what should I tell my buddy to prepare him? In other words, what do you tell clients on commercial trips who don't have experience rafting to prepare them? Or is the answer just to tell my friend that this trip maybe isn't for him? This is exactly what I said at the beginning. Like, you have a responsibility to prep them. So I would tell them we're going to a place where we're not going to have cell coverage. You could get injured. We don't have a good plan to manage an injury. And if we get a boat pinned, we could be stuck in the sun for 3 hours, 5 hours unpinning it. And you don't have any ability to help. So you just have to kind of watch. And yeah, just be really honest about what you see as the risks are. Like, hey, it should be fun, but there are potential risks and you need to decide if you want to go. So like, explain the risks and then let him make a decision. Then before the trip, we do a safety talk, which I've done. Pretty sure I have plenty of videos on this channel if you search enough for what a good safety talk would have. Basically, you know, a good safety talk would cover, you know, what you're doing, where you're going, the class of the river. We'll talk about the equipment he should be wearing, proper PPE, life jacket, helmet, wetsuit, shoes, whatever. You want to make sure he brings that stuff too, or you have that stuff for him. And it's good stuff, you know, not just some beat up old minimal float PFD. If your friend doesn't have experience, you want his PFD to have flotation, not just like some low float thing everybody's wearing because they look cool. And then go into if he's going to be paddling, you know, the paddle, watch out for the T-piece, parts of a raft. If he's just going to sit in a gearboat, how to hold on the gearboat. Talk about if you fall out, if you know, how to get back in, keeping your feet up for foot entrapments, when to aggressively swim and self-rescue, when to just kind of get your feet up and go defensive swimming. Talk about throwbacks, talk about flips, talk about river-specific things like strainers, particularly cold water, a portage that's going to happen. It's just dangers on that specific river, and then just kind of give them a chance to ask questions, or you summarize however you want. That's to me what a base level of content for it would be. Only the answer is, I don't know if the trip is for him or not. I don't know you. I don't know him. So I can't tell you if that's the answer. Tell him not to come or not. Just knowing that you have a responsibility to explain the risks, do a proper safety talk, give him the right PPE, and then you need to be competent and on river, you know, provide, you know, proper boat spacing in order so that if he falls out, he can be rescued. So you have a responsibility to put it together. There's a lot of examples of one boat trips where somebody invites their buddy or buddies and the boat flips and there's nobody there to rescue them. They don't know what to do. And the two buddies die, or the one buddy dies because there's nobody there to rescue them. So if this is a one boat trip, it's really not responsible unless you explain the risk of a one boat trip, you know, and he still wants to go. Let's see. M. Fabra Mazik says waterline on the wings is money. Yeah, those wings are sick. And the Sotar boats are just the next iteration better of that design. Okay, so cool. Hopefully that helps. Okay, umbrellas, bimini's. Okay, I haven't read this again. I'm gonna tell you my opinion. If you're on a class one float, which is not what the channel's about. If you're doing like the Labyrinth Stillwater in Utah, if you're doing class one, easy two, sure, you can have your shade umbrella. But if you're whitewater boating, I don't think these things are appropriate because you can wrap, you can flip, and these things become hazards. And part of the point of going outdoors to me is going outdoors, not protecting myself from the outdoors. So, I mean, get a hat. That's my opinion. Okay, before I read this, I just want to share my opinion. If wondering about your thoughts on umbrella best practices and bimini best practices, I don't have any thoughts other than I just don't think there's best practice. The best practice would be not to use them, in my opinion. I've got a DRE XD frame with an umbrella mount. The umbrellas I purchase usually from Amazon or Lowe's and generally have to modify them to use on the boat. That might include cutting down the pole to make it a bit shorter or add tape at the bottom so they don't rattle in the mount, or add a dowel down the umbrella to post to add rigidity. Also with the umbrella, you have to worry about wind inverting the canopy or even small riffles, shaking the umbrella and causing fatigue on the thin metal posts. Most umbrellas seem to last seasons. Yeah, so what I'm hearing is umbrellas are a pain in the ass. I hear you. That seems like, and if you are somebody who cares about the environment, maybe an umbrella that is disposable that you trash all the time is not the, I don't know. Maybe you don't need to have a new umbrella every season. Not to be mean, I'm just sharing giving you my very direct opinion. I'm not going to sugarcoat this. This gets me thinking about biminis. You can get some pretty cheap, less than $200 on Amazon. I worry that you miss more of the sights in a deep canyon. It catches more wind. It takes more time to put up and take down an umbrella. Coyote River Gear makes a completely flat bimini, but that's $700. Do you have thoughts about mounting a bimini to fold down in front of your raft or in the back? Yeah, I mean, it's a good point. These are all good points. You've missed the sights. It catches the wind. It's just one more thing. It's like one more thing at the put-in you have to rig on. At the end of the trip, you have to take off. It's just more stuff just so you can get out of the sun. And I get that it's nice to be in the shade, but I don't know, stay home. Get into backpacking so you can walk under trees. I'm not a huge fan of biminis. I did, however, at Clackfest, see a inflatable bimini. I wonder if I can Google that really quick. There was pretty, I didn't hate it as much as I hate normal biminis. Bimini. It was like something River Gear, super nice guy. Let's see, inflatable bimini. I don't know. There was one in my quick search here. I don't see it, but somebody had it. It was pretty cool. It was like a cool idea. I didn't dislike that as much because it was inflatable. It's probably going to be more durable, last longer, and you have to inflate it every time. And I think it's less of a hazard than a metal one. But yeah, anyway. Unfortunately, my opinion is leave these things at home, put some sunscreen on, wear a hat, get some sunglasses, take in some sun, look at the scenery, deal with less stuff. And for those of you, again, my channel is about like whitewater, like class three and four. So if you're doing class one and two, you shouldn't listen to me. But if you're doing like the Middle Fork of the Salmon, Selway, Illinois, Tuolumne, Dade, like the American, the Gauley, that's what my channel is about. We're not using Bimini's. And you'll never see a commercial company with a Bimini or an umbrella. It just isn't like a thing. Like we're like, so that's, and that's my background to commercial guiding. Like just, it's not something we're going to bring on a trip. Let's see. Mefabrizic said, I recently set up a Bimini for my kids. Amazing addition for hot summer trips. I got the tall mounts from Better. Yeah. Better mounts. I would go to them for the mounts. They, in the name, they're better. Yep. Cool. I'm glad. Thanks for sharing an opinion. Cause that's, my opinion would be like, don't bring one. So it's good to have an actual real opinion. Let's see. Jordan says, recommendation on a thinner but more spread out flotation on a PFD versus my NRS Ninja. Oh man, this comes up so much, Jordan. So we, the problem with, let me pull up the NRS Ninja here. Just get rid of this. And this is basically all these life jackets, PFDs that we're getting, that we're using for rafting, that you guys are all using for rafting, are designed for kayaking. This is a kayaking PFD that we take rafting. All these companies that make PFDs, most of them, are making, like they want to serve the largest possible market. So instead of making a really good rafting PFD, they make a really good kayaking PFD and hopefully use it for rafting. The only one I think is purpose-built for rafting-ish. I'm going to have to go over here and grab it. It's on this thing. So hold on a second. I bring this one up over and over and over. This is purpose-built for rafting. You would not kayak in this. This is the NRS Guide, the NRS Big Water Pro PFD. And you can see the flotation is more spread out. This goes down to your waist. You can't make a kayaking PFD that goes down to your waist because you can't bend over. This one has the flotation spread out. So it's had like 22 and a half pounds and it doesn't really feel like it because it's tall. It's designed for whitewater rafting specifically. I'm pretty sure. I'm not sure. You couldn't use it for kayaking. Maybe you could use it for something else. But all these PFDs, all of them, the Astro Green Jacket, the Indus, the Stolquist Descent, the, what else do I have back here? The Palm Nevis, the Cocotat ones, all of those made for kayaking. And so they're not spread. The way that they deal with the inability to go low is they push it out. It's just the nature. They make it further out to put the flotation there instead of pushing it down in order to accommodate kayakers. So if you don't want this, I would say, first of all, email the manufacturers and be like, come on, guys, make a good rafting PFD. People have done, unfortunately, it's been done. And I don't think it did well financially, unfortunately, because it didn't have time to catch on. Make the Big Water Guide cooler. It is so dorky looking. The reason people don't wear it is because it is the Nerd Alert life jacket, and the pockets are horrible. So take this, figure out how to make better pockets and less nerdy stuff. Like, we don't need this mole on the pocket. This is just dorky. And these hand things right here are where you get your oars stuck when you're shipping your oars. So maybe get rid of these. But just make this cooler and people will buy it. So my answer, recommendation on thinner but more spread out flotation on a PFD. The only thing is that NRS Big Water Guide. Let's see what Sean says about Bimini's. I love a Bimini on an easy river for passengers. I don't need one for me. A Bimini locks down better than an umbrella with front and rear straps. Yeah, I mean, I take people down rivers all the time. I think they would like a Bimini to be in the shade, but they're fine without it. I think, yeah, I'm pretty anti-Bimini. And I'll tell you the main reasons as I think about this. I'm just like riffing now. It's just, it can get caught by the wind. They get trashed. It's just more river trash. And it takes, the way it affects me is it takes people longer at put in to get their boats ready and longer at takeout to get their boats unready. It's just one more thing that people are fiddling with, filling up the boat ramp. And that's how it affects me. Otherwise, I don't know, take a Bimini's as long as you're not like having them blow off in the wind and sink, and you know, it's not trash in the river, you know, do your thing. But I just think that you can, if you want to be outdoors, be outdoors. I also like have to respect Mefabromix's point for kids. Like I can, all right, I can see that. I'm not totally crazy. I'm not totally accurate about this stuff. Okay, hopefully that answered your question. Probably wasn't the answer you wanted, but you got it. Okay. All right. Thank you so much for your passion, all your help with educating us regarding good gear. Yeah, thanks. It's really a challenge. I made a few mistakes that have cost me some money and some regrets. Yeah, I mean, that's a big reason why I do it. I can think about all the times I've seen people with the wrong length oars, the wrong oar locks, the wrong this, the wrong that. And so like I care about getting this information out, because it's really sad for me to see people with stuff that is just weird or wrong or just horrible. Okay. Anyways, we did the Rogue this past weekend. We noticed our first aid kit is underwhelming. I think a first aid kit is something that people don't think about enough. They don't put enough time into. It's like, it just says first aid kit on it. We'll throw it in a bag. We're good. It hasn't been checked for a million years. Nobody even knows what's in there. That's a pretty common thing, I think, out there in the world. Do you have any recommendations for a first aid kit or doing rivers like the Rogue, the Owyhee, the Middle Fork, etc.? Does anybody sell a complete ready-to-go first aid kit if you like, or should we piece it together? So this is a good question. I love this question. First of all, adventure medical kits, I think, is sort of the standard for whitewater. I'm going to pull it up here, remove this. I think that they're sort of the go-to standard company. And I don't want the deal. Okay. And, you know, they have a variety of sizes based on like how much stuff you need. Ooh, look at this BOGO deal. I had one of these a long time ago that I loved. I bought one recently. I wasn't jazzed on the quality, but it was fine. I think what you're really getting here, oh, that's kind of cool. It has a list. I think what you're really getting here is a bag with some stuff in it. It's like you're getting a good organizer bag and you're getting your starting supplies. And so, I mean, that's kind of cool the way that unfolds. It's a good way to just have everything come out and organize it. It's pretty cool. I don't think this is the most durable bag, but it's a bag. And if you don't use that much, it's probably fine. Yeah, this looks cool. Well, it's bigger than I thought it was. And they sort of have them. What I do for kayaking is I buy this one because I really like this simple bag and these little organizer pouches. And then I take things out and put things in. I don't like everything they have in there, but this is a very, these kits I hardly ever use. They just sit in they sit inside of a dry bag inside of the back of my kayak. These ones, it says ultralight watertight. I would not trust these on their own. They need to go in another dry bag. But I like these a lot for just, like I said, the back of my kayak. And there's a whole bunch of different ones to choose from. Ooh, these look cool. These Mole ones look tough. I like tough. I like this more. These, like, I don't need Mole, but I like a fabric more than this is. This looks more durable. So this is sort of, ooh, these look cool too. These look nice. So you're getting these nice kits that was stuff in them. I don't know if necessarily these are perfect. Oh, look at this marine kit, and they come in a dry box. That's kind of cool. Kind of expensive, but I don't think they're made specifically for whitewater. Wow, since I've last looked at their website, they have a lot of cool stuff. Whoa, was that a dog first aid kit? Are you joking my ass? Trail dog two pack? What? That's kind of, I think I'm actually gonna get one of these because I take my dogs hiking all the time and I have a first aid kit for me. Is there anything in here that specific to dogs? I've heard of examples of people having to give their dogs stitches, and I don't know how to do that, but if I had to, it'd be nice to know I had the stuff. Oh, I carry all that stuff anyway. Kind of cool idea though. Anyway, Adventure Medical Kits makes good kits. Also, but I'm really getting back to the question, I'm really a fan of making your own kit if you have the knowledge of, like, you need a good bag and then like bringing things based on your knowledge and your training or the people that you're with, because having a big kit full of stuff doesn't mean you know what it's for. Like if I told you have tincture of benzoin, would you even know what that's for? Like, you might just think, I don't even know what that is. Like, why do we even have that? Or povidone iodine solution. Or, I mean, why have Tylenol? Why have Advil? Why have Benadryl? What are they even for? Why do we have them here? So if you don't even know what it's for, it's kind of a little bit weird. But I think I did. If you Google rafting first aid, I think my article comes up first. Yeah, I wrote this blog post, which you could use as a guideline for making your own kit. And it has a list of things for like a medium-sized kit, and then what they're for, just so you know why you have these things. Maybe you don't need them, and maybe there's something else that you want to bring that isn't on this list. Like, oh, I think I should bring it based on your training, your experience, what's happened to you before. The other day, you know, like a month ago, actually, we were teaching a class and we had somebody take a rock to the shin. We thought we broke her leg. We were really happy to have a splint. It really was nice. And Coban especially. And so I have those in my kits now. I'm always going to have those in my kits. Like, it's not something I don't think I'll ever take off after that experience. But also I have my lists here too as PDFs. If you want to see, this is the list my company uses. To make like this, the medium first aid kit is sort of, we don't have this kit on our trips, but if guides want to make their own kit, we suggest this is the stuff they bring. So I don't make guides have their own first aid kits. I highly encourage them to. And I provide this resource as like, hey, here's some things as a guide you might want to have for you. And then this is our bigger kit that has the list of the stuff that we bring. And this kit changes a few times a year. I learn about something new. I take something off that we never use. I'm always fiddling with this based on my experience. I'm always tweaking it. One thing I recently added was Quick Clot. And Quick Clot, I don't have any with me now, but it's like, it's about this big. Oh, cool. This is kind of crazy. This is a first aid kit too. It's a little thing. And if you have a really bad bleed, it can put on to hopefully stop the bleed. It takes no space. It costs $15. They're kind of expensive for one of them. But if you have a serious bleeder, it's a thing to have. I added this after reading the article about the guy with the external and river knife that cut his neck. And they got some Quick Clot on it, which helped stop the bleeding. And I've been reading a lot of stuff about people basically severe bleeding. And it's just something you can do beyond just like gauze. What else have I done? I have things to consider. I'm like considering bringing a tourniquet and OPA and MPAs now. It's not my for sure. We always have it, but something I'm starting to think about. So it goes there. But this is my list. If you want to use these lists as a starting point for yours, great. I think the answer is you could just go buy something that's pre-done. And that's something certainly that people do. And a good reason to do that is, again, you get a good bag usually. The bag is the hard part of, you know, of the first aid kit, a good organizer. And then, but like knowing what you have and how to use it and then adjusting your first aid kit to things you're concerned about. Like in whitewater, like we're worried about drowning. So CPR masks are a big deal. Where they're probably not as big of a deal for my like hiking kit for my dogs. Like if I'm going to go hiking with my dogs by myself, I probably don't need a CPR mask. Okay, so the one other thing I want to share with you all is this. Oh, I see what I did here. Now that I have it, I just noticed I have this on my desk. This is a tiny first aid kit I put in my life jacket. And let me pull out a life jacket. A different one. So one of the new features of new life jackets and modern life jackets is there's a pouch behind you. And the original intention here was like, if you're kayaking overseas, the place you can put your passport, you know, some waterproof thing, maybe put some money in there just in case you have to hike out and pay for something flat and easy. You could put a SAM splint in here actually if you wanted to, but I carry this little thin first aid kit in here. And it's stuff I might need in a hurry. And these are just some things I put in here based on my uses. First of all, I put Tarate in here because I could fix a lot of things with Tarate. I could save the day with this much Tarate. Fixing a raft, I could put it in my kayak, fix a hole really quick. Steri strips right here. I have a scar right here from I took a paddle to the face once from my friend Dougie Fresh. And luckily we had Steri strips with us. And so or if you get a bad cut, you can get, I actually too, I fell on my hand, my hand one time. I was hiking up a side trail in the Chetco, and I fell and put my hand down on a sharp rock and got a really bad gash. Steri-stripped it. And then the next thing is Tagaderm. These dressings are waterproof dressings that I think are really nice to have in whitewater. I was able to put this on it. It stuck to it like a sticker. I was able to paddle and didn't get wet. And so if you have a bad cut and you still have to paddle, this is a way to protect it. So for whitewater, I would make sure you have Tagaderm and Steri-strips together. You can put Steri-strips on and Tagaderm over the top. It works great. I have a Band-Aid in here. And then I have triple antibiotic ointments. And then Benadryl, because if somebody's in anaphylactic shock, this is something you can do in a thin. You can put some Advil in here. You can make this little mini first aid kit out of this thing, right? And then you just have this with you in case of like nobody has anything. I also, all my kayaks have decent sized first aid kits, but this is, you know, just something I always have no matter what. If for some reason like my kayak goes away because I swam, I have these minimal things, and I could add more. I could add, like I said, Advil, anything flat doesn't take much space. There's a lot of first aid stuff that is flat and doesn't take much space you could put in this. You could also, if you were, you know, super cool, you could probably fit this in your pocket. I've never done it. To me, it would get annoying, but you could have this mini first aid kit in your pocket taking up no space, right? And so modern PFDs, I think, are starting to have this pouch behind it. I know that the Indus has it. There's even like a dollar sign at the top. And so this is the brand new, and the Vector. And instead of having it, they went with this like fancy Orbit Fit system in the back. My watch just talked to me. But I would prefer if they went with a little pouch right there than whatever this is in the back. Anyway, another first aid kit you carry in yourself. Okay, so Sean, those kits tend to be more organized than I would put together my own. Nice to have labels. Yeah, no, it's sweet. Like, I think having those Adventure Medical kits are great. The bag is the hard part. What about like a woofer or woofa class? So woofa class wilderness first aid is like 3 days, I think. Wilderness first responders, typically 10 days. Yeah. I mean, the most, you need knowledge. The more training, the better. The more training, the better the first aid. Heidi, wounds can easily get infected on river trips. A kit that concentrates on keeping wounds clean and dry is a big deal. Include waterproof bandages plus a variety of wound cleaning materials. Yeah. So that's, for me, the Tagaderm. This has been the best thing ever for wounds. This is just a sticker you throw over the top. You get a wound. I fell on my hand, I had a really severe gash there. I had to paddle like two more days. We took the irrigation syringe, cleaned it out really well, like just spent a long time with like clean water. And then we put the Steri-strips on it. And then my friend's a doctor. So he then, I don't know if he used gauze or not to clean it, but he syringed it really, he like irrigated it really well. Steri-strips, and then put the Tagaderm on, and it did great. Now this, it was on my palm, which was being used a lot in articulating. I had to put a new one of these on every day because it was getting trashed because of where it was at. It's just not an even surface. If it's here, my arm or somewhere else, this will last for a week. You just need one. But if it's somewhere that like your palm, you gotta switch them out. So I like to have a couple of them. Okay. All right. Good question. Hopefully I didn't answer that question yet. Does anybody sell a completely ready to go first aid kit? Yeah, they do. I think, like I said, I don't think there's any ready to go. Well, I noticed NRS is selling a first aid kit. Let's go back to that. NRS aid kit. I noticed that the other day. This might be boating specific. And so they have these now. I don't know. It looks like a lot of cool stuff. And so this could be a cool thing. My hesitation with these is I'm pretty sure these dry bags are not actually very waterproof. And I'm not for sure, but like, these don't look like the highest quality dry bags. If they can give you a dry bag plus all this stuff inside for $140, they're not sourcing the best dry bag in the world. This is a bag that keeps stuff from, like, this is a bag. Let's just say the bag. I think you might want to put it in a different bag, potentially. And I have to go through specifically what they put in here and think about it. I'm sure they've designed it for paddling. Look at this NRS Pro Paddler Medical Kit, $190. I mean, for the price, it's hard to beat. Yep, it's hard to beat. Okay. And then also Heidi's mentioned Next Carry. I know there's a higher quality Next Care for, I can't remember what it was. It could be Next Care. I don't see them here. It might have been My Medic. Oh yeah, these are the ones. These look sweet. Whoa, summer sale. These actually look really cool. I like this red color. It just makes it obvious it's first aid. These look really cool. And they have them by the number of people. This MyFac Large. That just looks awesome. Now, the one thing I hesitate with this, a lot of first aid kits now are giving you all this pre-packaged stuff. And it comes in like little pre-packages, which once you use it, you either buy the package from them to replace it, or if you just go to like Walmart and replace it, it's going to be a little bit messy. Whoa, there's a chest seal. That's crazy. Anyway, these look like pretty high quality. I've noticed these before. Here's their waterproof version. If you want the waterproof, you really want to put it in a Pelican, I think, or some sort of box like this. Yeah, that's cool. All right. Here we go. Jordan, I went into NRS and tried on the Big River Guide and ended up getting it. Sweet, Jordan. Awesome. Yeah, I'm glad. Oh, yeah, Jordan. You asked about this last week or 2 weeks ago. Yeah, yeah, they're nerdy a little bit. Hopefully you didn't get the nerdy color, the nerdy yellow I got, unless you like to be visible. I went with this because I like to be visible. We talked about this already, but it is a pretty nerdy color. But if for like the Grand Canyon, it's hard to beat. Okay, let's keep moving on. This is a long episode. We have more to do. Okay, commercial break. We're not going to do a commercial break because that's going to save some time. All right, this got sent to me the other day. Zach is going to shit when he sees this. Let's get to this question first, and then we'll go. Who makes the best camp tables? Any experience with salamander tables? Depends what you want. I don't have any experience with salamander tables. I use Recrotech folding tables. They're simple and durable. But there's some cool new tables out there. There's one we've just been demoing by some fancy company that's kind of expensive but really nice. Yeah, I don't have a good answer for you. Sorry. Here we go. Timothy says, My Medic makes nice first aid kits. Awesome. Oh, yeah. I've heard the SDG nesting tables are amazing. It's two tables. They nest really well. I have guides who swear by them. I've heard they're really nice. That's a good shout out. Thank you, Mafabrimisic. Okay. So this is a video that was sent to me. Let me share this. Let me see if I can share a stop stream. Let me see if I can share the screen. And everyone, I'm sorry for being so slow. Here we go. Instagram. Okay. Hopefully you all can see this. We're going to watch a video. I got to turn the volume off. It's off. So this is a whole beat down. Okay. By the way, getting beat down in a hole in a kayak, it really sucks. For those of you that don't kayak, it is horrible. And it's one of my goals in life to not get beat down in a hole ever again like this. It's really unpleasant. My last swim was getting beat down in a hole in Ecuador. And then the last beat down before that was in Bhutan, where I took a massive beat down and somehow didn't swim. These things are very unpleasant. These are things I'm trying really hard to avoid the best I can. And it's interesting watching the video because he tried to avoid it. This is what sucks. Is somebody threw him a throwback he was not ready for. I think this is why that person sent me the message. It's just pointless. And then I wish I could pause this. This is Instagram, so I can't pause it. And you can see him get the rope in his hand. He's moving his hand a ton. And so it's just getting all tangled if he threw it. And now where's the downstream safety? Like, why Oh, can I pause this? Okay, so here, yes, I'm gonna like shit over this. For one, this guy kayaking, he's trying so hard to go right. He goes too far right. Look at this surf he takes into the hole. Oh, he hits a rock, but that is just so bad. But the guy who is on shore next to the hole, I'm not sure that's the best place for somebody to be. Because if you're getting beat down in the hole, you're just hanging on for dear life, hoping you come out. You don't have the ability to look for a rope. And if somebody threw me a rope while I was getting beat down, I would be very upset. Because it's just something to get tangled in my arms to keep me from keeping. You can get your arms tangled up and not be able to pull your skirt. Like, this is throwing a rope into somebody in a hole that doesn't know it's coming or doesn't want it is horrible. It's incredibly horrible. And when this guy swims, because the likely outcome of a beatdown like this is swimming, he's going to go downstream. Who's downstream? I would much rather have homeboy in his kayak on the shore there, ready to help him when he swims, than on the shore with a throwback. Or if he has a throwback, be 100 feet downstream so the guy can swim, get a breath, get his senses, and prepare for a rope. Like, the odds of him getting, and if you throw the guy the rope, you pulling somebody out with their kayak is very low, especially with this tiny, this looks like super thin rope. Look at it. Like, what is the hope of the throwback? The only thing this thing could do, if he hit the guy and it tangles up in the kayak, it's horrible. So the reason I get so upset about this is because I really, the only way to like educate, in my opinion, what you should do, this is my opinion, I could be wrong. Maybe you're supposed to throw bags and people in holes. Maybe that's just the answer. But by me getting so upset about this and annoyed by this, hopefully you think twice before throwing somebody a rope into a hole that's getting beat down. Please, at a minimum, if you see me getting beat down in a hole like this, do not throw me a rope. I will get beat down. I will eventually swim. Usually what happens is you swim and you go low and you flush out, right? Being beat down in a kayak is much, I'd rather just swim this rapid top to bottom than be in this kayak right now, because you're in the kayak is going to get trashed. If you're swimming, you'll just, it'd be unpleasant, but you flush through generally. So he's going, he's getting beat down. This is always super unpleasant. The guy's looking to throw some more rope at him. The guy loses his paddle. He swims and he's up. And that's pretty much how it goes. Like, if you eventually get tired, you give up, you swim, and you go downstream. Now there's no downstream safety. Maybe there is. I just don't see it. And this guy is on a swimming mission until somebody can rescue him. The guy on shore with the rope is just useless. He's just, at this point, he has to now take his rope, stuff it back in his bag, go get his kayak, launch before he can be useful to this guy. Instead of anticipating, the end result is probably a swim. Let me go be downstream and help the guy. Now, luckily, guy in pink boat is there. Maybe let guy in pink boat can do something. I have no idea. But yeah. Like, why the rope? It's like people learn, like, anytime there's a swimmer throw a rope, that's the outcome of the rescue class. Oh, swimmer, you throw a rope. And this is a place where that's not the case. Gosh, if he hits him with the rope and it tangles in his body, it's horrible. Okay, cool. Hopefully I covered that one enough. All right, moving on. Back to the questions. Oh, geez. Okay, here we go. Getting my glasses out. All right, 26-minute surfing vid. I came across your Middle Fork surfing for 26-minute video and critique. I understand your concern for the boater safety, but not sure if jumping into the water and waiting for the boat to eventually pop out would be my first option. A lot of people may be comfortable jumping into the water like you or me. There are also dangers in doing such. Foot entrapments, hitting rocks, becoming injured, and not being able to self-rescue to the shore effectively, and thus taking a long swim and potential flush drowning. Yeah, so this is, let me find this video. How do I find this video? This is a video from Tappan Falls. And the guy surfs for a long time. and they do all kinds of crazy things, and they can't really get them out.
In this video, honest.
Okay, I guess we're gonna wind down. So let me get to where. This is a video review of me doing a video review now. It's like Inception video review. And oh yeah, the other thing, I haven't looked at this video in a while. Like, he didn't tie his bags in, so tons of bags come floating down the river. Right. And they miss so many throwback attempts. Like, so many throw. They keep throwing throwbacks, they keep missing. They have basically no chance. So this is that video here we're talking about. And I'm sure at some point I said, this guy should just jump out. Like, if he cares about his safety, he should just jump out. And what the commenter is saying is, I don't think that's probably okay for you and me, but for most people, that's not good advice. And I'm going to push back on that a little bit. Well, first of all, yeah, the things that can happen. You could have a foot entrapment. You could go for a long swim and have a flash drowning. So I wouldn't jump out necessarily. It really depends. You don't want to jump into shallow water. If you do, you want to keep your feet up. You want to know there's a risk of foot entrapment and do things to avoid foot entrapment. That would be a goal, right? Here, if you jumped out of tap and falls, I don't think a foot entrapment's a realistic outcome. And then they come in to talk about flush drowning. You could swim forever. Like, you could not self-rescue. So you don't jump out if you can't get to shore. And the way you get to shore is either you swim to shore or maybe there's a kayaker downstream. And I remember with this video, man, this is like Inception though. There's this dude on the rock that we have a POV from. This dude on the rock is completely useless. Like, where he's positioned is sort of like the last video, the guy on the shore threw the throw bag. Like, if this guy on the shore actually makes the throw to the raft, he doesn't have the ability to get purchased from that rock to do anything useful. And if he pulls the boat towards him, it's not going to pull him out. He's basically been taught boat stuck, throw rope, pull. Well, it's not that simple. Like, if they actually connected on the throw bag, he's not going to do a rescue. A much better place for the kayaker, and that's this dude here who did this really cool stop on a rock. He could be down in the eddy downstream below. So hopefully there's somebody doing this, but there needs to be at least one or two people downstream here that if this guy falls out or swims on purpose, they can save him. So getting back to the comment, let's see, let's go back to here. I would say, so the dangers, foot entrapments, hitting rocks. You could hit rocks, yeah. Becoming injured, you could become injured. Or not being able to self-rescue to the shore. Effectively, that's taking a long swim and potentially a flash drowning. Yeah, you don't want the long swim. So if you did jump out, you'd want to think, can I get myself to shore after I jump out? And or is there downstream safety to help me get to shore, right? The reason I suggest jumping out is, like, if you look at the end result of what's probably going to happen, and if I remember right, this boat does flip and he swims anyway. So usually when there's a surf like this, usually the end result is the boat flips and you swim. When the boat flips, that's a very dangerous position for you because you don't choose when the boat flips. So it happens unexpectedly. When the boat flips, there are oars and things. There's equipment in the boat you could get tangled in. You could be tangled in an upside down boat and or get hit by an oar or some frame or something metal. So the chance of injury is way higher being in a flip, right? And you don't know when it is. So I would rather on my own terms, with a little bit of just like thoughtfulness, jump out on my own than be unexpectedly violently flipped in the raft. And I bring this up because there's another video before this, the one with the guy on the shore who's talking about what's that other video called? It's the dude, somebody remind me that he kept saying something like, oh, Maytag, the Maytag video. He's getting Maytagged. In that video, those guys end up flipping. And one of them, if I remember right, like tore a spleen. And I can't remember if he got a helicopter out, but like, it was a major injury. Like, if he had just jumped out, he, as long as there's downstream safety, the flush drowning thing shouldn't happen, right? but a torn spleen is a pretty serious injury. So in the violent flip in the Maytag one, he got pretty hurt in that flip. If I remember right, this guy flips too when they pull him out. This is the one where they did the 3-1 to pull the boat out. Yeah, there it is right there. That's it. Let's hit play. So they finally pull on some ropes. I'm talking right now. That's why this is going slow. I know it's there. It's coming up soon. But like, I would have rather him be on the downstream tube and jump out on his own terms than to have this violent, unexpected flip where he's going to be underwater longer, right? Let me see if this flip happens. There we go. Now he swam regardless, right? And a lot of times the way boats come out of holes is they flip, and then he can still get injured. So I'm going to say, yeah, for sure. I wasn't showing that video. I have to go back. This is the video of him flipping later on. So let's go back to the question. So I'm going to say you don't always jump out, but you might want to. It's sort of like that one rapid. There's that one in the Grand Canyon. We watched the video and live show a while back where there was the dory pinned on the rock and the person wasn't making the move and they jumped out the front and people gave her a hard time for jumping out the front. I'm like, I would much rather just swim the end of the rapid than go sideways into a dory pinned on a rock. Like there's so many ways you can get hurt or die being on a raft, hitting a dory on a rock sideways versus just jump out the front and like swim, right? The Grand Canyon, I don't remember reading any incident reports of flush drownings in the Grand Canyon or because it's pool drop or foot and drownings, right? So you have to read the room where you're going. Okay. Anyway, by staying in the raft, the boater could take more control of the situation by being more aggressive with his oars and moving around to unweight the raft to change the dynamics of the hole. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, somebody who's a good boater could do things to get the boat out. So I think that's what I would definitely try first is like, hey, can I, as a boater, get on the oars, move it around? Can I do something to get this boat out? Right. I think I would try that first. Yep. I think I'll try that first. I don't think I said in the video, like, oh, if you surf a hole, just jump right out. Like you should try some things, but at some point recognize your outcome may not be great being on this boat that flips. Okay. Ropes in the water, definitely a huge risk. A couple thoughts. First, practice your throw bagging. Yeah. This is hard for sure. These throw bags tosses were horrible that they did. It's also a tough one. It's a long ways to go. If I remember right, they got super lucky too. Like they missed and somehow their throw bag got caught on the boat and attached itself. They made one and got the guy. And then he let go. And then they threw it again and it just magically attached, which was interesting. If a rope does make it to the raft, clip it to the frame on the downside. Which could have it not flip, maybe. Yeah. I mean, you don't always. Yeah. I mean, yes and no. I don't. Usually the flipping is what gets it out. That's the unfortunate thing is like maybe you want it to flip because that's how it's going to come out of the hole. Like if you don't let it flip, it may not come out. Or it eventually will by flipping. Third, no one practice rope MA systems to correctly set up through doing. Yeah. They're, their mechanical manager is a little – yeah, so basically you're saying just be better. Yeah, they definitely – be more practiced. They definitely could. Another option of getting a secure rope from the shore of the raft is a reach. I know you have your doubts about this piece of equipment, but one of the challenges I have successfully used is to have one ready on shore when the boater tries to throw his rope. If it doesn't make it to the shore, then throw it to reach the capture line and bring it to the shore to connect to a system. It takes practice. Yeah, the reach – for those of you who don't know, I forget how to look this thing up. Let's go back here. Look what it's called. Oh, the crossline reach. This is a tool that some people use, the crossline reach capture device that You can throw to attach to other lines. You could throw maybe attach to the boat. I've been on the Illinois, and somebody was surfing this hole at the bottom of Greenwall, and they fell out. So the boat was surfing for like 20 minutes, and we were just throwing bags full of rocks to the boat. And so a tool like this might have been useful for us at that point. Sometimes you just need something like this that attaches. But I think what the commenter here is saying is like there could be a rope thrown from the raft, and this tool could be used to attach, get that rope and pulled out. I have a few hesitations with this. It's not 100%. It's a tool. It's very niche. And so it's something you use for very niche applications. And when we have limited money and space for equipment, would I rather spend $175 on this or have better pulleys? Like, that's a tough call. Like, this is an expensive device. And so what's for something that gets used not very often, are there better things I can spend money on? And if I only have so much space, there's money, there's also space in my bag. Is this worth the space? Right. And then there's the training. You know, most people do 2 or 3 days of rescue training or whitewater rescue, whatever they want to call it, swift water rescue. You know, the training time on this thing is between, 3 minutes of just explaining what it is and say good luck with it to a couple hours of getting out there, seeing what it can do to a day. Would I rather have people learn how to use this thing that can attach ropes? Or would I rather have them work on the basics, swimming, walking in shallow water, flipping boats? Like, what's the most valuable use of our time? Things that happen often and things that are involved with more fatalities, or something that doesn't happen very often? And this is basically, in this case, it's just equipment retrieval. There's somebody on the boat, but he can just swim. Like, if he swims, the rescue's over, right? Just jump out of the boat. We'll get you to shore. It's over, right? Then it's just equipment retrieval. And I feel pretty strongly that if you let this boat surf for an hour, it's going to come out. So doing this tool saves us potentially an hour of waiting for the boat at that point. That's my take on it. If anybody watching has thoughts or comments, please comment and tell me what you think. But I just don't think it. If I had the money and the space, sure, I'll take it, right? But when space is limited, training time is limited, and money is limited, this is very low on my list. Now, if you're on a swift water rescue team, like a search and rescue team, your firefighters, I can see the value of this. I can totally see. It makes sense. But as a whitewater paddler, I'm not sure. I won't disagree. There's some value to this. I think there's better uses of our money and training time in the whitewater environment. Hopefully that was what's clear. Okay. Here's a comment, actually. I had a friend hole riding, and he got out downstream and held the perimeter line to pull the boat out and climb back in. Whoa. This is on North Fork Payette. Yeah, that's baller. I've seen that before, too. Yep. That's an option. I'm not going to recommend jump out and hold the perimeter line. I'm going to say North Fork Payette's a tough one because a swim there is brutal. I'm not sure. Oh, man. That's where I wouldn't want to swim. But if you jumped out and held the perimeter line or like an anchor, you're still attached to the boat. You're not just on your own mission, and you can do something to get it out. So, yeah, interesting. I'm not going to call that a technique, but I'm not going to say it's a bad idea either. So the reach, yeah, that's an option. Have you ever tried using a 5-gallon bucket? Most of us take attaching a rope to it and throwing it downstream to catch the flow and pull the raft out. I've never done this. I don't know of it being used to get a boat out of a hole, but I do know of multiple examples of this technique to get boats unwrapped. And I've never done it to get a boat unwrapped, but I've talked to many people who have, and it can work. So I just think in this case, in this nasty hole that he's in, I don't think he has the ability to untie a bucket. Like, whenever you're getting surfed in the hole and you're just doing loose circles and you're just going, it's hard to do things. It's hard to like, oh, let me get a bucket out and tie it to a rope. And it's just, you could do it. It's just very hard. Whereas when you're pinned, you're like, oh, we're just in a static position. Let's you know, get a bucket off and try that. But I wouldn't. It's something that could work for sure. Love the LUDA acronym to quickly get your mind set on the important things to do. I think is the LUDA. I think that's the leadership, upstream safety, downstream safety. After, did I come up with that LUDA? Or anyway, the other part of it, the LUDA is the stabilize. It should be SLUDA, stabilizing at a headcount. So step one is stabilize, get a headcount. This guy's not stable. Like this is if I'm in the situation, I'm still in. Let's stabilize. Like this guy's in a hole, getting beat down. There's a lot of ways he can get hurt. So I want this stable. Right. So, but LUDA is then set some sort of leadership. I talk about that in this video, I think. An upstream spotter, they end up pulling ropes out. So they have responsibility to send an upstream spotter for sure. But as much as you can have an upstream spotter, great. Downstream safety, that's in case the guy either flips and swims like he did or jumps out on purpose or falls on an accident. The downstream safety can get the person, but also all the bags that came out. I think there was like a bunch of bags that came out. Question on the after plan. If the rope in the situation was actually firmly secured to the raft and the MA system was successful in pulling it out, the raft would have moved downstream and quickly tightened the line given the force of the current, thus sticking the MA system and preventing it from being released. If there wasn't eddy for the raft to swing into, no problem. But if there was not, you now have a whole new problem. Yes. So what he's saying is once the boat came out, then what's it going to do? And if the MA system worked correctly, it's going to just be like pull like pendulum down to river right. I got to pull the video up again to show this, I think. Let's see. And my guess is let me pull the video up. So remove add. So let me find the video. So when the boat, they're pulling on it from river right. You can see the dudes over here. Make this big. You can see the dudes over here. They're pulling on it. And then if it stays attached to the system, the boat then just pendulums to the right side. Now you have an upside down boat tied to the shore in fast moving current. And that's the think of it after. Like, hey guys, once you do your cool Z rigging and get the boat out, what's the next thing that's going to happen? The next thing is, let's see. So there's the rope. Attach the boat. So if the rope stays attached to shore, it's then going to swing to the right bank and be on a very, very tight line. I didn't really think about this when I watched the video before, but it looks like the boat. What is this guy doing? Oh, this guy is trying so hard to be a hero. He throws the throw bag from there. Again, if the guy grabs the throw bag, he's just going to pull this guy in the river. Oh, yeah. So it looks like I mentioned earlier, the rope they finally got to the boat, they just threw it to the boat and it magically attached. I think it kind of the bag wrapped around the spare oar maybe, and that's what they pulled on to get it out. If it was attached to a D-ring, that boat would have swung to the right side and been kind of a pain. And so that to me goes into think about after. And so. So your question is, if there was an eddy for the raft, no problems. There was not. Now you have a whole new. Yes, exactly. Can you please comment on the load release techniques? I mean, you're going to cut something. Unfortunately, there's no good load release technique here. If you're super nerdy and you do a what's that press? The valedictorian truss. You could run the system through backwards potentially, but. I wouldn't recommend going that route. I wouldn't recommend being that nerdy. Realistically, you're going to cut something, you know, and there's no rush when that happens. Honestly, here, like the boat's tied to shore. Let's just think about this for a second. And in some ways it's kind of a good thing because it keeps the boat from going downstream, but you're probably going to cut a rope. A lot of times a static line, sometimes a prusik. It's just a prusik, but it's unfortunately cut, which is kind of a semi-dangerous thing. Like it's not fun to cut a rope under tension like that. Could a carabiner with a mooter hitch be attached between the anchor and the system so that once the raft is freed, it could be controlled by running the rope through the mooter? Can a carabiner on the motor be attached between the anchor and system? Yeah, you could do that if you could somehow tie off the motor, maybe have somebody or have somebody just hold the motor the whole time. But realistically, like in this kind of situation, I mean, it's something you could think about for sure. I don't think most people can even tie a motor, much less think about setting this up ahead of time. And the way I would handle this is the boat is tied to shore on the right. That sucks. Walk down there, think about the best place to cut the rope so that you one, save your, you know, don't just cut your rope in the middle and have your 150 foot rope becoming 275s. If you cut at the end, your 150 foot rope becomes 140 or 135. And two, cut it when we know it, in a way that like we can then do the recovery easier. And three, think about safety. How can I cut this in a way that isn't going to sling back or be violent so somebody gets hurt? Yep, good thoughts. Cool. And that is the last question of the day. Wow, we did a lot today. No comments on that. Interesting. So if anybody has any thoughts about this one, this is an interesting one. I think for me, like some principles I would put into place and why I'm a fan of this, just have the person jump out, wait for the boat to come out. I think a key principle of rescue is like, keep it simple. Like what's the simplest thing? The simplest thing is not throw the guy a rope and do a Z rig to shore. That's definitely not the simplest thing, you know, and remembering there's rescues and recoveries. So rescue is people, recovery is stuff. I'm not worried about, they seem very worried about the raft. I was more worried about the person. What's the deal with the person? You know, let's set downstream safety for him. How do we make sure he doesn't get hurt? Knowing that this thing happened before and somebody, you know, took a hit to the spleen. And I have to go look at the whole story, but that spleen injury didn't sound like a very positive thing. Okay. Last thing I want to talk about is the new Sock de Lager throw bag. I'm super sorry if I'm pronouncing it wrong. So Dan at Sock de Lager Gear makes really great stuff. And he just sent me, this is the bag I got from a couple weeks ago. This is a 55 foot version with a thicker rope than what he normally has. And it's a sweet throw bag. If you have a hard time throwing throw bags at distance and you need just a light throw bag, this is a light throw bag. This fabric weighs almost nothing. And the rope is just 55 feet. And it's 5/16 rope. So it's pretty grabbable. It's not like a quarter inch that's hard to grab. This is just a solid throw bag for anybody, but especially if you're not somebody who's super athletic, you have a hard time throwing bags any way you want to, this is the way to go. And I like to attach it to a frame through this. So I'll use a cam strap and just like tie a cam strap over the top and clip it on. I can just take the cam strap off and take this with me. But Dan just made a new version. He has a waist belt for this, which I wasn't a huge fan of. He made this new waist belt like this that I just got this prototype of, that the bag fits nicely into, and then this goes over the top. And this is just a really minimal, nice waist belt. And I'm gonna take it on the river this week and try it out. I think the problem with it is this can come like undone like that. So I think I'm gonna probably end up suggesting that he make more of a cover for this, or maybe you just make sure you put this through, I don't even know. But that's what a prototype is, a way to test it out and see what works and what doesn't work. But it's a really nice, modern waist belt system for this throw bag. And it's pretty minimal. Like, it's hardly where I wore it earlier to test it out. It's not super noticeable. You're not like this big, bulky thing in your back. It's this kind of minimal, small thing, a nice light package. So I just want to share this, something that Dan's working on, probably see more of in the future. One more comment. Better make sure that Munter isn't, yeah. I don't get the humor part, but I get what you're saying. Better make sure that Munter hitch isn't a glow hitch. I hope somebody is better at getting jokes than me, because I don't quite get it. But yeah, you better make sure of that for sure. So that's it. Thank you all for watching another mediocre episode of the Gear Garage Live Show. And if you're still here, take a second, subscribe if you haven't. I really want subscribers. Makes me feel so cool. Think about liking it, because then people, you know, the algorithm hears about it and spreads it out to the world, and like two more people will see it. And I can share some of this amazing insight that I have that is to most of you probably pointless, but I appreciate you at least listening to some of these ideas that I have. And I appreciate the conversations and just little things like this, like go to NextCare to find, you know, waterproof bandages and take a woofer, class, or the water line on the wings is money. Love that. Talking about, you know, different PFDs. Yeah. Thank you all for watching, subscribing, liking, and I'll see you next time.